So as we know, Tu B'Av is coming up. And everyone, except for one person sitting here, is thinking about Shidduchim. Tu B'Av. So that's what Tu B'Av is about. Tu B'Av is about finding the right person. Tu B'Av is about finding the right person. So why is that? Why is Tu B'Av about finding the right person? So we'll go through a little bit of it. And again, questions are welcome. Let's go through a little bit. What happened on the Tu B'Av at all? It's a fascinating thing. Two famous events occurred on Tu B'Av. We're talking about the original in the Torah time. Later on, many events occurred on Tu B'Av. But in the original Torah time, this is what happened. The Jews, short history lesson, the Jews sinned with the spies. They sent in the spies, and the spies came back, and they said something derogatory. Maybe Kalvin Yefuna said good, and that they decided to go in the majority, whatever the reasons were, and the Jews decided, we don't want to do this. And they were punished by staying 40 years in the desert. Or instantaneous death, almost. And Moshe Rabbeinu davened, and Kadosh Baruch Hu said, make you a deal. Anyone between 20 and 60 is going to pass away in the desert, and we'll start over from scratch in about 40 years from now. 20 and 60 is 40 years, and within those 40 years, everyone's going to die. How did they die? At what point did they die? So the Medrash says, that what happened was, every year, on Tisha B'Av, all the Jews would go, unbelievable, they would dig their own graves, they would get into their grave, and then they would hope, they would be like Mr. Roosevelt, and they would decide, am I getting up or it's done or not? And what happened was, they'd be sitting there, and every year, 15,000 people passed away on Tisha B'Av night. Everyone else got up. It was really the people hitting 60 years old. That's really how it worked. So the 59-year-olds that first year all passed away. But it's roughly 15,000 people a year were dying. And every year on Tisha B'Av, the rest of the people would get up the next morning and they would be alive. Until the last year. The last year in the desert, all the people went, there was only 15,000 left. So every year they were going down. Now we're down to minus 40. That's how it works out, 60,000 in the 40 years. Now we're down to the last 15,000. And they really were at wit's end. That's it. They realized what was going on. They're about to be 60 years old. It's all over. And they went into the grave. And then the next morning they woke up. I'm like, okay, that's weird. What's going on here? So in the old days, they didn't have clocks and calendars. What they did was they went by the sun and the moon. So they looked up on the sun and the moon. They said, you know what? It could be we had the wrong day. Because it's not so easy to know when the full moon is. Maybe we're off by a couple days. They weren't sure. So they said every night, imagine that, every night they would go back into the grave, lie down, assuming it's over, and every night they'd be waking up. They couldn't figure this out. We must be off on this calendar. Until Tu B'Av, on the 15th day of Av, the moon became full. 15th day of Av, 15th day of every month, the moon becomes full. And they realized they did not miscalculate. And they realized for whatever reason, these last 15,000 survived the great calamity of being told that all of them are going to die in the desert. These last 15,000. And they survived when? On Tu B'Av. Because Tu B'Av is the 15th of the month. 15th is when the moon gets large. Since the moon got large, they now survived. So it became a very celebratory time in Klal Yisrael's history. That was one major event in Torah time in the desert that occurred on Tu B'Av, which makes today Tu B'Av a major day of celebration. Because it means that Jews in the desert recognized that the Gzeret ended. And they somehow survived. Now the easiest way to understand how they survived, why should they have survived? That's not fair. Why there was a Gzeira, everyone should die. Every year 15,000 were dying. Why do we get to these guys and they get to live? What's going on here? Is that fear? So the Hasidic Sfarim bring down, a genius idea, that when everyone got into the grave, every time, and they were pretty sure it was over, but part of them held, maybe not. Maybe I'll survive one more year. So because of that minuscule, which we'll discuss tonight, that minuscule lack of prayer, save me, that minuscule amount, every year people died. But the last year they were there, everyone else is gone, and it's 15,000 here, and there's 15,000 left. They realize this is it. It's over for sure. So when they davened, could I survive? That was really from the depth davening, because they realized there's no other way to do this. There's nothing left. There's no other options. Every year we had options. 15,000 out of 30,000 will die. Okay, I have 1 out of 2 chance. First year in the desert, I got one out of 38 chance. Okay, I like my odds, 1 out of 38. 1 out of 38 is a negative odds in the beginning. As it goes down and down. First year, the first 15,000 died. So that means basically everyone else survived. Second year was a little tougher, the odds. As everyone's dying, the odds get tougher against you. But okay, everyone's okay with that. Till the last year, there's no more odds. You're 100% going to pass away. So their tefillah, their davening was from the depth of their heart, and they all survived. So we see one thing, that when davening is done from the depth, from 100%, not 99.9, and we'll see what that means. When we daven 100% of the time, you get answered. That's the first major event in Klal Yisrael. The second major event, what we're talking about today, is one of the unique times in Torah history. Every year, we read the whole Torah. We start from Simchas Torah, Bereishis, we go around till the end of the time. Very time when you're reading the Torah, not all the events occur at the same time. Veschanan is one of the couple events. Parshas Veschanan, which we're going to read now, almost always comes out on the 15th day of Av, right after Tisha B'Av, and Veschanan, according to the way you have to measure it in Eretz Yisrael, in the Torah time, Veschanan is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu started davening. The words are the parasha Veschanan, I daven beisahi, I davened at that time. Moshe Rabbeinu was given a gzera that he was not going to survive either. He was going to die in the desert. And at that point toward the end, the beginning of this week's parasha, Veschanan, I started davening beisahi, and I said, I want to be saved. And he did 514, 515 prayers, and it didn't work. But when did these prayers begin? It's a very unbelievable idea. The rabbis are geniuses. When did Moshe Rabbeinu die? Mayano knows. After that, right? Mm-hmm. We'll cut that out, don't worry. When did Moshe Rabbeinu die? Zayin Adar, he died. That's Zayin Adar, we celebrate, observe Moshe Rabbeinu's death. If you go backward in time, we know he davened 515 prayers. How many prayers a day do we do? We do 3 prayers a day. And it's a whole cheshbon to work out. We're not doing the mathematical equations. But if you go back from Zayin Adar and you go around the calendar, it comes out 515 prayers began on Tu B'Av. So Tu B'Av became the day that Moshe Rabbeinu stood up and said, I'm going to stop praying. So it's an amazing event. That means the people in the desert, the regular people in the desert, 15,000 davened their heart out and was answered. Moshe Rabbeinu began, it's not just he prayed one time, he began a series of prayers, series of davenings that survived almost 3/4 of a year. And he wasn't answered, we'll discuss a different time. But that means that Tu B'Av coming up this week is not just a day of massive prayer, but a day of beginning prayers. Begin the prayers throughout the year, because that's what happened originally. And the Gemara discusses that Tu B'Av was also later in history, not in the time of the Chumash. Later in history became a time when people got together for Shidduchim. So that became a more famous, popular thing. But the reason it became a popular day for Shidduchim, it means it's also a day to daven for Shidduchim. The davening for Shidduchim is on Tu B'Av. And if you daven correctly means 100%, guaranteed success. Almost guaranteed success. Moshe Rabbeinu davened correctly, and he was told by God, at the beginning of this week's parasha, there's a special reason I can't let you go into Eretz Yisrael. But it means outside of a special reason by God, telling you can't go into Eretz Yisrael, you can't get answered, you're good to go. Every other prayer that's 100% is going to be answered. Now, it's interesting in this week's parasha. We'll discuss now, what does 100% prayer actually mean? This is where it gets a little depressing, but it means you got to work for something. So in this week's parasha, of course it's in this week's parasha, because this week's parasha we're discussing, the first words, Ve'eschanan, is all discussing the idea of prayer. That means when you're reading through this parasha, there might be other events that might not appear that way, but it has to do with prayer. So there's a weird set of halachas in this week's parasha. Here goes the weird set of halachas. An accidental murderer. Do anyone know the deals of an accidental murderer? So if a person purposely murders someone, and there are witnesses, in Judaism we are pro-capital punishment. But you need a very serious set of laws to work that out. 2 witnesses to see it, it's a lot of details. But if someone purposely commits a crime of murder, as an example, which we're going to discuss that one, he's out of the game. Let's say someone accidentally murders someone. He falls off a ladder, it's a classic example, and he falls on someone and someone dies. What do you do with this guy? He didn't murder someone, you can't murder this guy. So we have cities of refugees set up. We don't have a jail system in Judaism. This is the only jail system we have. And it's a very, very fair jail. He goes with his family. He gets free food, maybe free rent. It's a question. And he lives with the whole yeshiva. But he's forced to go to one of these cities. And he stays in the city. Until when does he stay in the city? Jail sentence till when? He killed an adult. He killed a child. He followed through. What are we keeping this guy for? So what's amazing is, the guy stays in the city until the Kohen Gadol passes away. Very strange rule. When the Kohen Gadol dies, amnesty is granted for every one of these refugee cities. So everyone's living there. They have no idea when they're getting out. Might be tomorrow if the guy dies. He might live a long life, might have good genes. So now what happens with these guys? If you're sitting in a, God forbid, accidental murder, you're sitting in one of these jails, in a city jail, you know what the guy's going to try to do? He's going to start davening that the Kohen Gadol should die. That gets him out of jail. So what happened, it says, the rabbi said, because of this weird situation, the mothers of the Kohen Gadol would have the first Chesed Foundation. They would go like to the houses and the cities of refugees. They find out who are the accidental murderers here, and they would bring them food, and they would do their clothing for them. They would help them out, hoping that therefore they won't daven that their kid should die. That's their hoping for. You have Rachmanas on me, I'm a mother. Don't do it to me. Here's food, I'll take care of you. Just don't daven for my kid to die. Okay. That's the basic story of the accidental murderer. Now, the question asked by the Sfasemis and others, this guy is davening that the Kohen Gadol should die? Who is this guy? He's an accidental murderer. By the way, the reason why no one in this room is an accidental murderer, thankfully, is because God doesn't have the accidental murderer occur randomly. He chooses the guy who deserves some form of punishment, and he creates it that some guy walked under the ladder when he fell off. The odds of that happening are very extreme. So God chooses the bad guy to fall on the guy. That's why he goes. The accidental murderer is accidental murderer in reality we're looking at. But he has something behind him that's very, very bad. In fact, when the Torah refers to the accidental murderer, it continuously refers to him as a murderer. Ratzach. It doesn't call him the accidental murderer. When you read the psukim, it's obvious it's accidental. But the Torah keeps saying, the murderer shall go to the city. The murderer will leave the city when the kind... Why do you keep on calling him a murderer? He's not a murderer, he's an accidental murderer. It's a big difference. The answer is that the accidental murderer within him is not the greatest guy in the world. Not the greatest guy in the world. So the question becomes this. Who's the Kohen Gadol? Greatest guy in the world. Kohen Gadol, once a year, goes into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Real power. Real impressive. Real holiness. And this guy... This accidental murderer has the right to daven to get this guy killed? Do you have that power in davening? Can you daven that someone else should die? And if you were a bad person, can you daven a good person should die? The Sfasemis asked this question. His answer is what they claim his answer is. I think it's read a little differently, but we'll do the public answer. Is that he cannot daven for the guy to die. No, if he says that, he's just a bad guy. And God will never listen to a prayer of A saying B should die. That's insane. According to him, he can't do such a prayer. What he's praying is, he's doing repentance for his actions. He feels bad he accidentally murdered. He feels bad that he knew he got to the accidental murder, which is he did 20 other things wrong. And he's repenting, repenting, repenting. And all he's saying is, God, get me out of this situation. Get me out of the situation is vague enough that maybe God will accept the prayer. But he can't daven A against B. That's too crazy. That's the Sfasemis, the Hasidic approach. But in the Musa world of Kelm, they say a bad guy can daven that a good guy should die. And it will work. The mothers of the Kohanim Gadolim were nervous. It's going to work. Why should it work? Because the system is set up that if you're 100% sincere in your prayer, even an evil prayer of killing someone, the prayers are answered. 100% sincerity, guaranteed success. That's what you need. You need to be the guy stuck in the grave thinking I got no chance out of this. That's 100% sincerity. But if you're 99, it doesn't work. How do you know 99 doesn't work? Because when the mother of the Kohen Gadol walks over to the guy and gives him a piece of rice and cookie cake, he no longer davens with sincerity. And the Kohen Gadol lives. That means how much this guy's sitting in a jail cell, his only way out is the Kohen Gadol dying. He's allowed to daven for the Kohen Gadol to die. How are we going to stop this? The mother's going to give him a piece of cake. Do you think a piece of cake means the guy doesn't want to leave jail? Of course he wants to leave jail. Nobody wants to stay in jail for a piece of cake. Of course he wants to go. Maybe he feels bad for the mother, maybe not. Most people are selfish. She's thinking to herself, I want to get out of this place. Thank you for the cake, but no thank you. But the answer is that when the woman comes and offers him the piece of cake, and for sure he takes it, but probably even if he doesn't take it, the fact that he took a piece of cake, he's no longer 100% sincere in his davening. You need 100% sincerity in davening. Now, I'm not saying don't daven if it's less than that. I'm saying if you have 100% sincerity, you could even daven that someone should die who's holy. That's how much power tefillah has. If you don't have 100% sincerity, you still have a lot of power. So now we have a situation where people are sitting around, and now we know that Tu B'Av is the beginning of a series of prayers. That's what it's supposed to be, a beginning of a series of prayers. And we now know as well that when the sincerity of prayer works, even for evil, you're in the game. So what you have to try to do, not easy, we'll see in a second. Not easy. What you have to try to do is come up with the sincerity of prayer and make it positive. If you have sincerity of prayer to kill someone, goodness is 500 times badness. So you don't need the same level of sincerity for goodness. These are all bad things. I don't want to die. I want to kill a guy. These are negative things. What about positive things? Positive things, you don't need 100% sincerity because positive is always better than negative, which would mean, potentially, that if you're doubting for something positive, make up a statistic, 94% sincerity should be good enough. So what you have to do now is understand that one of the reasons people want to get married is not all, is some positive stuff God-wise. That means, think about that, it means whatever your personal life is like. You want to get married to create more Jews in the world, to have children, more Jews, not a selfish reason. Also selfish reasons, but you want to have more Jews in the world. Or you want to daven because you feel that if you were married, you'd be on a better spiritual level. The idea is that you want... You want to have the positive focus. Marriage has religious positivity to it. That's obvious. Creating children is the biggest mitzvah, possibly, of the 613 mitzvahs, according to some. Women are not obligated in that mitzvah, in the classic sense, but they are part of the mitzvah, obviously. According to the Meshech Chochmah, just as a side note, the reason women are not obligated in the mitzvah is not because you're less or more or any of that stuff. It's because God has no mitzvah that he gives you that puts your life in danger. Since in the old days, and even nowadays, sadly, since childbirth is, not only childbirth, the entire process is physically, potentially dangerous for any mother. It's just, we're just used to it today, miraculously, but it's not. It's very, very difficult. And even in today, in 2024, women are, forget African countries, even in America, women are still dying in 2024 giving birth. It's mind-blowing. So the idea is that since it's such a potential that a woman would, God forbid, pass away, God can't say you're obligated in that mitzvah. But that's the only reason. It's not you're not obligated. You're not obligated because you can't, God can't say, do something that'll put your life in danger. But otherwise, you are technically somewhat involved with that mitzvah as well. And that's one of the great mitzvahs. Pruvu is one of the great mitzvahs. Getting married is a great mitzvah. Women might be obligated in the mitzvah to get married, by the way. There's a mitzvah of one mitzvah of having children. There might be another mitzvah of the 613 to get married. And if there is a mitzvah to get married, it's possible, very possible actually, that women are obligated. In fact, it's almost for sure that if you believe in the 613 that men are obligated, as a mitzvah, women would be as well. The 613 has a list of mitzvahs. Not everything you think about as a mitzvah is listed, and not everything you don't think is listed. But in the 613, there's a question, is marriage one of them? Almost everyone who holds that marriage is a mitzvah includes women in the mitzvah. So you have a mitzvah to get married, and a borderline mitzvah to help with having children, and just a single life in America today is not conducive to spirituality, sadly to say. So what you have to do is, in a way, including your own personal desires and pressure from the outside world, sadly to say, what you have to do in some way is to try to have the prayer to be about the spirituality of it. And if it's about the spirituality of it, then you don't need 100% sincerity. Then less than 100% sincerity works as well. Now what's amazing is, as I'm saying, in this week's Parsha, everything in this week's Parsha, if you run through it, can be a theme related to davening. It starts with the first words, Ve'eschanan. The word Ve'eschanan means I davened. So the whole Parsha, which would mean the whole week, this week is a good start, is about davening correctly. Not an easy thing to do. Davening correctly. I told you what's in the Parsha. Weird, accidental murderer. But I'm explaining to you that the accidental murderer laws are very related to davening. Very related, because it's a law, teaching us a law about how davening can work. As well, in this week's Parsha, is the Ten Commandments. Why the Ten Commandments now? What does that have to do with davening? The answer is that people have to recognize that in the Ten Commandments, the first of the Ten Commandments is to know God exists. Not just to know he exists, but accept God's authority in this world. That means we believe that what God is doing for us might not look that way, but is all good. God is all good, to be honest. But the point is that you have to recognize that everything in this world is for good. The first of the Ten Commandments is recognize that God is for good, which means you have to start thinking to yourself that you are in the position you want to be. So you're davening to get closer to God and to create more godliness in this world for positive. And you have to recognize at the same time that if you're not being answered, God forbid, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was not answered, it's because God has a master plan. Moshe Rabbeinu was unbelievable. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, if you do one more prayer, you're going into Eretz Yisrael. But don't do it. Don't daven that last prayer. That's what Rashi said in the beginning. The prophet says, Rav Loch, Genug Shoin, in Yiddish. Don't do any more. Stop right here. And he said, why? There's a master plan. Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh, there's a master plan? And my personal interest is dissolved. By the way, of the 515 prayers that Moshe did, there's some fascinating ones. At one point, according to some Midrashim, he davened that he should be a cockroach just to enter the land as a cockroach. That's how serious he wanted God to soul. We go for the year, we don't even appreciate it. Moshe Rabbeinu was like, please, I'll be a cockroach, just let me into the land, let me in. But God said, that's how much he wanted to go. And God said, listen, I have a reason I can't let you in. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what, I won't go at all. So what we have to work on, while we're doing this as well, is when we're working on praying and davening with sincerity for godliness in this world, on Tu B'Av for Shaduchim, you have to focus also on the fact is that you are where God wants you right now. That means if you go on any of these, I forgot the name, but someone said L'chaim or meaningful L'chaim, minute something, I don't remember exactly. Something where they interview people who got married late. Is that what it is? Yeah. Living, yeah. Living L'chaim. Someone sent me something. There's a friend of mine's son is on it. No, but one of them is interviewing people who got married late. I don't know, unless that's the only ones they sent me. One of them interviews people who got married late. Yeah. And late doesn't mean like you guys think 23. Late means like much later. But the idea is what? This point is important. The idea is that all those people being interviewed, why they make interviews is because they all say one thing that's fascinating. That had they met their spouses a year earlier, it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked. Whatever reasons, everyone's in those situations, that's why they're on the Living L'chaim website. But whatever reason they have those situations, they're there because God is orchestrating it. So we accept in ourselves this week, Veschanan is praying. Veschanan is praying with sincerity. Veschanan is praying for God's help. But in the same week, we're having Veschanan, that Tzeres HaDibros, to remind us that even though we're praying, we might not be answered. Like Moshe Rabbeinu was not answered, but we have to understand God has a good plan. And the same way Moshe Rabbeinu said, God, if your plan is different, I fully accept it. We have to say, not easy to do. If God, it is your plan, I have to fully accept it. That's the way that you're supposed to approach prayers. Understanding that sincerity is important. And sincerity means knowing that it's good for God and knowing that one of the answers sometimes might be, not yet. Not yet. For your good. Not yet. As an example, a couple weeks ago, Pinchas became a Kohen after he killed Zimri. The rule is, if a Kohen kills someone, even accidentally, he loses his kahuna. Can't do Birchas Kohen. If Pinchas would have been a Kohen day one, which would have made sense, he should have been day one a Kohen when Aaron became a Kohen, he was right there. Then later on, when he would have committed the murder for Zimri, which he was supposed to do, he would have lost his kahuna. So by God telling him in the beginning, not telling him why, you're not kahuna right away. It's only Aaron and his sons. And then he went and did this great move. Then what did God tell him? You'll be kahuna forever. Pinchas is an example of someone who was in a weird situation saying, why didn't I get what I want right now? And in hindsight, it was the perfect thing for him. Had he got it right away, he would have lost it. So sometimes, again, easy for me to sit here and say it because I'm older and married, so it's not fair. But I mean it. Sometimes the wait is, it's not something, all the time, the wait is for your good. Sometimes you'll notice it. Sometimes you go on these websites and they'll tell you, oh, it worked out for perfect. It wouldn't have worked out earlier.